हाय,
हाय, एंड वी आर गोइंग टू लुक, आई'ल शेयर द स्क्रीन इफ आई कैन. वी आर गोइंग टू लुक एट द टेक्स्ट ऑफ द तोरा व्हिच इज शॉफ्टिम. राइट, सो हियर वी हैव द सेड्रा. I think you're able to see it. You're able to see it yet? Nina, can you see it? Yeah, okay. Now, so this is the beginning of the Sedra. Shoftim v'shotrim, which is about, well, Shoftim is generally translated judges. Shoftim judges. V'shotrim and shotrim are generally translated like police officers. In modern Ivrit, the shofet is a judge and the shoter is a policeman. And that does correspond to the traditional way of understanding these words. So the English translation here is some kind of, I don't know what it's based on, but it's a challenge translating the Torah or any text from one text to another, as Eve is a great expert on the whole art of translation. So let's take it as judges and police. So shoftim v'shotrim titen lecha b'chol sh'arecha. You should put judges and police, let's use that word, in all the gates, all your gates. That means the law court was usually at the gate of the city. Asher Hashem Elokecha noten lecha lishvatecha, which the Lord your God gives you for your tribes. V'shaftu et ha'am mishpat tzedek, and they should judge the people with a righteous judgment. And the idea is that the shofet, the judge, decides. He's the legislator. Maybe it's not exactly what a judge is in modern parlance today. The shofet is the legislator, and he's legislating according to the Torah. And then the shoter is the policeman, the one who makes sure that the people obey the law. So there's the people who express what the law is, the shoftim, and the shotrim who make sure people keep it. And then there are various rules about the whole justice process. Lo tateh mishpat, you shouldn't divert, you shouldn't pervert justice. Lo takir panim, don't show favor, partiality. Lo tikach shochad, don't take bribes. Ki ha-shochad ye'aver chachamim, taking a bribe, even if the bribe, Rashi points out, even if it's to say what is the genuine judgment in your view, and someone is offering the judge extra money to give the judgment that the judge thinks is the right judgment, but nonetheless, to take a bribe ye'aver will blind einei chachamim, the eyes of the wise. And the words of the righteous will be made crooked. There's some fascinating passages about this in the Talmud, about judges not taking bribes and even the smallest kind of thing. If a man helps the judge out of a boat, he's traveling by boat somewhere, and he comes to the harbor, and there's a man on the side who helps him out of the boat. Then it turns out this judge has to be in the law court in the city. And this man who helped him is one of the litigants. And the judge says, I'm terribly sorry, I cannot judge your case because I'm partial to you. You helped me out of the boat. And so you have to get another judge who doesn't know you. So that's when we interpret this literally. Now, then there's a long tradition of interpreting this verse in terms of the individual, that the shofet, the shoter that we have, the judge, the policeman that we have at all our gates, the gates are the gates of the person. the eyes, the nose, the mouth, the ears, what we hear, what we see, what we say. Those are the gates of the person, the way in which we connect with the world around us. And in that connection, we need judges and control. We need shotrim, we need the police officer. Don't look at that thing. Don't listen to that lashon hara, that evil speech. Don't listen to it. And this sense of self-control. So this is an old Musa ethical concept. I don't remember, or I don't know where it first is interpreted in these terms, but it's from that kind of tradition that the discourse takes off. And it's a discourse that was said in 1966, beginning with these words, Shoftim v'shotchim. Oh, ya, 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 yo, ya, ya, ha, ya, 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 yo. Ya 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 yo ya yam ha ya da dam ba ha ya yam ba yo ba om ha ya yam ba ya ya yo ya ya yam ba ya ya yo ha ya yam ba ha ya ya yam ba ho wa ya 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 yam bam bam. Ha ya 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 bam bam, ha ya 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 yum, aho, ha ya 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 ram bam bam, ya ya ya
ya ya ya
ya
ya ya
ya ya ya ya ram bam,
ya ya ya
oh,
ya
ha
ya
ya,
ya
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 bam
ya
bam.
ya. Ah,
Na
yeah,
ya ma ma
oh, yeah.
nay 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 nay
Right. Thank you very much. Thank you, Rabbi Lou. And here we have this Shoftim v'Shotchim. So this discourse, which hasn't been edited by the Rebbe, it was said on Shabbat Parshat Shoftim in 1966. And it begins with this verse we've just been reading. Shoftim v'Shotchim titen lecha b'chol sharecha. You should put judges and police at all your gates, meaning the law court at the gate. Umavua b'drushei chasidut, and it's explained in Hasidic teachings. Shemakata shekatur b'chol sharecha, the fact that it says at all your gates. Hu al derech ma shekatuv noda b'sharim ba'ala. It's like the verse in Song of Songs, in Mishlei, sorry, in Proverbs. Her husband is known at the gates. Va'inin b'zeh, what this means is, v'hine ma shekatuv noda b'sharim ba'ala, this fact that it says her husband's known at the gates, ka'e al eshet chayim, it's talking about the woman of valor. Right, this is in the passage from Mishlei, the end of Mishlei, the end of Proverbs, which is recited or sung on Friday night. And it speaks about the woman of valor. And one of the things it tells us about her is that her husband is known at the gates. And so the woman of valor, Shehi Knesset Yisrael, that means the Jewish people as a whole. V'im kein ba'ala, so if we're talking about the Jewish people as a whole, who is her husband? Hainu kudsha b'richu, that is the Holy One, blessed be He. K'mo shekatuv, as it says, a verse which describes God as the husband of a woman. Bo alayich osayich Hashem tzvarot shemo. Your husband, who creates you, is the Lord God of hosts. Uchmaimer Rabbeinu Zal, as the sages said, Ein isha koret et brit, a woman only makes a covenant, Eile lemisha asa kli, to the one who makes her into a vessel, in other words, her husband. And that making of her into a vessel, where it quotes this next verse, Shenema ki voalaich asayich, your husband is the one who made you. In other words, it's talking about God's relationship with the Jewish people compared with that of a husband and wife, and the way in which there's a deep bond between them. Shezeh inyan hanesuin, and that is the concept of marriage. Now, one can read this as the mashal, as the parable, as it were, which is about marriage, and we can read it as what it's actually talking about, the nimsha. It's about the relationship that we have with God. So the idea is that we have this deep bond with God. And that deep bond is there in such a way that we speak about the way noda b'sha'arim, our husband is known at the gate. And the implication seems to be is that we are the ones who know our husband. We are the ones who know God. That seems to be the implication of the text. Rabbi Lu might read it differently. We'll hear that in a moment. But let's just see the question that is asked. The Hiksha b'Zohar. Now the Zohar asks a question. The Imkayin, if that's the way you're interpreting these words, how can you say her husband, God, our husband, God himself, the infinite, is known at the gates? Halo ha'ein sof baruch hu. Surely the infinite, may he be blessed, who ne'elam b'tachlit ha'elem, is completely hidden. Ve'ein mi sheyasigu, and there is no one who can understand him. So in other words, if we're interpreting this phrase in Proverbs, her husband is known at the gates, as the husband of the Jewish people, meaning God, and he's known by us at the gates. It doesn't exactly explain what it means by gates here. That's going to be part of the answer resolving the problem of the Zohar. But if there's some way that we, the Jewish people, know God compared with the way a wife and a husband know each other, this Adam knew Eve, this bonding between them. So the Zohar asks, how can we possibly know God? God is infinite. And the Zohar gives two answers. Now, before we come to the answers, let me just ask Rabbi Lu if you agree with my way of understanding what's come up to here so far. Are you reading at the same
time? Yes, yeah. About the question.
Yeah.
Definitely. Because it says Noda. It's known. Which means a good knowledge. Good knowledge that means, you know, well acquainted.
And so what are the sha'arim, what are the gates in that first level of understanding of the verse?
He gives two answers.
Yeah, he's going to give two answers about the gates.
Yeah. So that's what it is. Noda b'sha'arim, that God is known in measures. I think that the main question is on the word Noda.
Yeah, the question's on the word Noda. Right. All
Which
right.
Which means he's known. How is he known?
Yeah.
And the two different answers, there's two different interpretations of the word Basha'ori.
Yeah, right. Okay. So the Zohar is asking, if we interpret this verse as us knowing God, how, in some way similar to a woman and her husband knowing each other, how can we know God? God is infinite. And then it gives two answers. And the Zohar gives two answers. The first, Sha'perush noda b'sha'arim hu, when it says he's known in the gates, it means the il it yadav it dabek, he cleaves, and he is known and is cleaves, lufum mad mashaya belibe, to the according to the way the person understands in their heart. Kol chad kama diyachil di dabka, each individual, as much as that person is able to cleave, Berucha de Chochmata, to the spirit of wisdom, Kamuva b'Tanya, as it explains in Tanya. Bahainu, this means, Shahaperush de Sha'arim, that when it says gates, Humilshon Hasha'ara, it's from the word evaluating, estimating, an assumption. She'enzo yedi amitit, it's not real knowledge. Ela Hasha'ara bilvad, it's a kind of assumption that we have. We are facing God the infinite, and we can't actually know God, but we have certain assumptions about him. Now, each person has different levels of what these assumptions might be, according to how deep each individual is in his or her connection with the divine. And so therefore, so that's the individual dimension. Called this phrase, the Mashaer Belibe, each person according to what they measure in their heart. So there's a kind of an individualist aspect here. And it's through this individualist aspect that each person relates to God. It's through a series of assumptions, even though we know that God is actually infinite and completely beyond what we call knowledge. Ubichlalut, so summing that up, says the Rebbe, in general, hu inyan yediyat hametziyut velo hasagat hamahut. Now that means knowing the existence of something, of God in this case, and not grasping the essence. Now this is a phrase, this idea of knowing the existence and not grasping the essence, which is found many times in the analytic thought of Hasidism, of Chabad Hasidism, and it's speaking about a dimension of knowledge of God where we can be aware and we can know that God exists and we can see the effect of God and we can say many things about God, but nonetheless, it is without grasping the essence, because the essence is beyond us. Now that's the first explanation. Now then, so let's try the second explanation, and then we'll discuss it together. Hi, Glory. Nice seeing you.
Hi.
Now. Or maybe let's take this point. I mean, this is an interesting point. This point we can understand. The next point might be more difficult to understand. So are we able to relate to this idea that we're an high chesed, that we're able to see, and Ilana, we're able to see what God does, and we are able to see that this is the work, you know, this is the work of God. As Isaiah says, lift up your eyes to the heavens. Some of us might have been in the countryside over the recent weeks, you know, looking at the stars in the heavens, which you can't see in London mostly. Lift up your eyes to the heavens and see who created these, says Isaiah. So we can see the works of God, but we don't know the essence of what God really is. We cannot grasp that. It's completely beyond our puny understanding. So that's what it means. Her husband is known in the gates. The gates mean the estimations, the approximations in various ways that we think about God in a certain way, and that way we can think about God. Any question, any comment on that?
Yes, actually, I could say something. The
Yes, please.
Shearim, the gates, you said yourself, it could be our senses as well, the hearing, the everything. So when we see something, it's all kind of colored by our belief. Seeing, talking, smelling, everything is to do with this, with the Hashem.
That's a very beautiful point. So Rivka is connecting the sort of Musa way of understanding this verse, the ethical way of understanding this verse, which we're going to come to at the end of the discourse, with this idea as well that it's our human senses which allow us to see the world, and by the fact that we see the world and hear and smell and taste, we are able to have some kind of evaluation, some kind of approximation, you could say, of thinking about God who creates everything. Yes, that's very meaningful. Any other point from anyone? Okay, let's go back. Now, the Terutz Hasheni, now the second way that the Zohar explains this. Sha'arim, but when it says, when the word sha'arim, which meant gates, and it means also assumptions or approximations, shiur umida, comes from the term shiur, which means a measure. Midah is like translating that into a just another more well-known term for that, a measure. B'kai al ha'esa sfirot, and that actually is referring to the 10 sfirot, the 10 divine emanations. Shehein b'shiur umida, they are defined, they have a measure, so to speak. Eseh v'lo tesha, there are 10 sfirot, not 9. Eseh v'lo 11, 10 and not 11. This is how the Book of Creation talks about them, where we have the idea of sfirot. And the kevan shagilu al yadam, since the revelation through the sfirot, hu b'medida v'hagbala, is measured and is fine, it's defined. It's defined, it's specifically this way, or it's specifically that way. L'chein davka al yadam, therefore, it is through the sfirot, efshala hasig bo yitbarech, we are able to have some kind of grasp of the divine. Al yidei hamashalim, through the metaphors, the parables, me'eseh kochot hanefesh, of the 10 qualities of the soul. Now, the same way that there are 10 sfirot, there's wisdom, understanding, knowledge, love, severity, mercy. Now, those are divine sfirot, and they are also aspects of the person. They've got names which link them to functions of our own inner selves. We have wisdom, we have understanding, we have knowledge in the way that these terms are defined in Hasidic thought. They're also functions of the person. And so we are able to say, or kmo shekatuv, as it's written, mipsari echze elokai, from my flesh I will see God. Now, this is a verse with fundamental significance in Hasidic thought, because it's saying that by considering my flesh, that means the human being, not specifically any one individual, but any human being, we have certain psychological and emotional structures within us. And the way in which the psychological aspects interact with the emotional aspect, that is something which we see in the microcosm in this human being, which could be ourselves, introspecting, as it were, or following a path in a Hasidic discourse, which is doing the introspection for us in a way. And from that, we can come to realize what the macrocosm is like, what God, infinite God, is like, some aspect of the infinity of godliness. Shiyadiya zu, and this knowledge, he has sagamamash. This is really understanding. When we consider our this structure of emotion, in intellect, the interplay between intellect and emotion, and we consider the way it works within a human being, this is really understanding. It's not only an estimation, it's generally that's what we are. And then from that, we come to some sort of sight of godliness. And so it's saying that when we make this step, it's a very bold statement here, when we make this step, going from the human structure, the inner structure that we can grasp directly, and then make the microcosm, and then making the inference from that to the macrocosm, there is actually something genuine about that. It is not just simply a metaphor which has nothing to do with what it is speaking about, really speaking about. It is exactly, it has some deep inner relationship. And this is something that a Rebbe is able to say, and that this knowledge is genuine knowledge, and it's lo hashara bilvad, it's not only an estimation like we had before. And how do we know that? Because this verse says, Mipsari echeze elokai. From my flesh I will see, I will gaze. Because the word shahari echeze, the word see, hutagum shel re'iyah, it's the Aramaic word for seeing. This echeze, it's not a normal Hebrew word, although it does occur in Hebrew like chizayon, a vision. And so this is also the Aramaic word for seeing. Hainu re'iyah, it's seeing, v'lo hashara bilvad, and it's not only an estimation. V'hainu shebitchinat elokut, and that means that the godliness, which is in the sfirot, efshar liyot hasaga, we can actually grasp that level of godliness. Mash'en kein bitchinat elokut shalamayna me'asfirot, whereas the level of godliness, which is higher than the sfirot, hayadiyah hi bederech hashara bilvad, we are not able to know it in any tangible way. It is only in a way of estimating an assumption, knowing the existence, but not being able to grasp the actual being, the actual nature. Whereas when we're speaking about the lower aspect of the divine that fills the sfirot, the divine which is called, the divine which fills the worlds, and where we have depictions of the kindness of God, the severity of God, mercy, and so on, that's something that we can grasp directly, and in that sense, we are actually grasping godliness. Now, that is actually a very, very bold statement, that it is possible for a person who is, let's say, contemplating in prayer in a very intense way, in the way which is described in Chabad Hasidic teachings, that there is some intimation of the divine more than just a hashara. The hashara itself, this estimation, you know, this first level, is also an exalted, ecstatic perception. It's also something very exalted. And in fact, it's more exalted because it's on a higher level. But here at this lower level, the radiance which fills the world, the way in which the Rebbe, the discourse, is speaking is that that is something really tangible to the person who thinks deeply into that. Now, most of us do not think so deeply, and we don't come to that kind of intense experience. But the discourse is presenting this as a possibility of awareness. And as I've sometimes mentioned, the first time I visited the Rebbe, which thank God was 51 years ago, it was in the summer, and seeing the Rebbe praying the morning prayer on Shabbat morning, one felt, just looking at the Rebbe, that he was not just saying words of prayer. He was talking to God. That was the way one could feel it. And so it's on a completely different level. So the discourse is here describing a level of intense sight of the mind's eye of the person, which the discourse presents as a reality. It is not just an assumption or a metaphor. It's a reality. But that reality is possible on a lower level, and then we go higher, and then even that level, that kind of sight, one cannot have, but one goes to the level of hashara, of a kind of an assumption. And those are the two meanings of gates which the Zohar presents. So would anyone like to comment on that, Rabbi Lou?
It's beautiful what you're saying. In other words, it's two different levels, but it's not two different people. It's talking about two different aspects of godliness, and one which is accessible only by an approximation, by an estimation, as you say, and because it's higher. And that doesn't mean that one's not aware. One is very deeply aware of it. And because it's so high, you know it's infinite. You understand what it means. It goes beyond the limitations of our capabilities, of our faculties. And the same person, in another aspect of that person's or another stage, whatever it is, has a different kind of a knowledge. There are aspects of godliness which one can actually internalize and intellectual and understand through the example of one's own self. Beautiful.
Thank you.
I love the way you describe the Rebbe talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in his davening, but how I find it difficult davening alongside a minion, because of the speed at which they daven. How did he handle that? How can we handle that?
Rabbi Lou and I, we used to have a friend called Zalman Dubnov. He was a Russian poet. And his mother was very religious. And she managed to persuade him to leave Russia. And they all left. And he went to visit the Lubavitcher Rebbe.
Yeah.
And he said to the Rebbe, "Rebbe, I come here to your synagogue, 770. People are praying so fast. What can it mean to them?"
Yeah.
So the Rebbe said to him, "Freud says that even a subliminal activity can have an effect." And Zalman was so impressed with the Rebbe mentioning Freud that he stopped worrying about the question. The point is, you see, when a person davens, it might be that they're davening very quickly, but they've actually entered a different kind of conceptual space. They're in a different realm. And the words of the prayer are a kind of illumination, which is in that realm. And it might be that they're saying each word I hope this noise from outside isn't heard by you.
We can't hear anything.
Yeah. So the a person might say each word lingeringly and think about three different meanings of the word before going on to the next word. Or they might, blah, 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 you know, they might quickly be saying these words, but they're in a realm of connection with the divine, as the Baal Shem Tov wrote in his famous letter, the letter which is called his sacred epistle. He says there in each letter of the prayers or Torah study or all speech, there are worlds, spiritual worlds, worlds and souls and godliness. And the letters join together and become words. And the words are ascending. And he writes to his brother-in-law, to whom the letter is addressed, you should join your own soul in those words which are ascending. Now, the person who is very quickly davening in the minyan might be doing that, or his soul might be doing that. He's thinking about whether he's going to catch the such and such train to get to work. The minyan's taking so long. But his soul is eagerly connecting with the godliness in the words. Rabbi Lou?
And also, very hopefully, he might have spent hours or an hour or a half hour beforehand studying, which brings him to a situation where he's talking to that person. Like, when you want to speak a foreign language, even if you know it, but it's not that well, the words go slowly and you have to make sure you have the right word. And when you're speaking to someone that you're really familiar with, you're talking to, you can say sentences much more quickly.
Interesting image. In other words, God, you know what I mean. I don't have to spell it out.
I saw a letter of the Rebbe where the Rebbe writes that there is Tefillah, that means praying at length, and this Tefillah, where one is contemplating, but it's not necessarily at that kind of length. And then there's prayer at a pace of speaking, but with Pirush HaMilos. In other words, there's an awareness, there's a mindfulness of every word that's happening. And if a person is mindful and has managed to remove the distracting aspect of his life or her life and is really living just totally in those words, you can get a lot more mileage out of it than one would think, looking at it from the outside. But Hasidim, the big Hasidim, don't daven necessarily with the minyan. They will answer. A rebbe is a different thing. I don't. I have no, no words, and it's a totally different thing. For the rebbe, that might be speed davening. But the chassidim who spend hours davening, they spend most of the day on Shabbat davening. They come to the minyan, they will study Hasidic texts, then they will answer all of the communal parts of the prayer that one has to answer, the Kiddushah, the Baruch Hu. And then when the things quiet down a bit, they'll spend the next couple of hours, 2, 3 hours in contemplative prayer, which Rabbi Lowenthal can speak about, will tell them about what their mental did every Shabbat.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's really helpful.
Thank you. Right. So now we come to section Bet, section two of the discourse. Ubei inyan. Now the explanation of this subject is Keyedua. Sheyesh Hamishim Sharei Bina. There are 50 gates of understanding. Now, this relates back to the gates which are in the opening verse of the Sedra that we began with. Judges and police, you should put at all your gates. So that's what it refers to here. Shezeu Masha Katub B'chol Sharecha. It is talking here about these gates, and the word kol, all, begematria 50 has got the numerical value 50. Kof is 20, lamed is 30, and the Rebbe is saying the bet is just a prefix which we don't have to worry about. It's not part of the main word, and the main word is kol, which adds up to 50, and those are the 50 gates. Shehem Chamishim Sha'arei Bina, those are the 50 gates of understanding. V'inyanam hukmosha haniftach latzit bo lachutz. They are like gates, literally gates, which open in order to go outside. V'hainu, that means she'or ha'hasagah shebemoach, that the radiance of the understanding in the mind, yotzeh, goes out of the gate, v'nitpas b'lev, and is grasped in the heart. Sha'alev mesha'er u'masig, because the gate, the heart, it's using the same word, mesha'er, the heart perceives, or literally it means approximates to. But it means it's getting involved in understanding et ha'itbonenut, the contemplation. So the mind is contemplating, as Rabbi Anu was just describing, and the contemplation is not just a dry cerebral activity. It leads to deep emotional response and arousal. So there's this flow from the mind into the heart through the gate. Ach kadeshi shetiyeh, but in order that there should be hamshachat hamochin b'midot, the flow from the mind into the emotions, tzricha liyot chila, first there has to be ha'ala'at hamidot el hamochin, the emotions rising up towards the mind. So it's a two-stage process. Shezeu ma shekatav, katuv, that's what it says. Einei cholei lecha yesabedu. The eyes of everyone are gazing at you, God. And here we have the word kol again, which is the numerical value 50, 50. V'hu inyan 50 sha'arei bina, and that's the 50 gates of understanding. Sha'al yadam na'aseit ha'alat ha'midot el ha'mochin, through which comes about the emotions being elevated towards the mind. Ba'al yedei zeh na'aseit achakach, and then you have the responsive process, hamshachat ha'mochin la'midot, where the mind flows down to the emotions. So we have here a dual process, where the emotions are, so to speak, seeking what the mind is going to tell them through the mind's contemplation. The mind is studying some aspect of the deeper dimension of Torah, and it's contemplating this, it's thinking about that, and the emotions are taking their guidance, that's how I understand it, from the mind. And then there is a flow from the mind into the emotions, and the emotions are able to flow with a purity and intensity. You see, you could have a kind of religiosity where you have emotions without the mind. And that could be very profoundly intense emotion, but it does not have the careful focus that the mind is able to give. And so in sort of discussions, as there are in the history of Chabad and in, you know, in living memory, you know, different pathways in Jewish expression, whether just pure emotion is in itself reliable as a path. And the teaching in Chabad is you need an interaction between the two. You need to have the, and here it's put very beautifully and succinctly, that the emotions need to be seeking what the mind is able to transmit to them of the divine, and then what the conceptions and the images that the mind has been able to encounter become transmitted to the emotions, which are able to be switched on in an intense way. Okay, so then we have a step higher as well. Omnam, however, the fact that it says, now here we're switching to the other verse, right? But just before we said there are 50 gates of understanding, and that was linking to the verse in the Sedra, that you should put judges and police at all your gates. Now we're going to the other verse, which is in Proverbs, in the Woman of Valor, which is recited on Friday night. Now, the fact that it says her husband is known in the gate, it means that there flows through the 50 gates of understanding an even higher level. Because just as there are the 50 gates of understanding, similarly, Yeshnam Gam Shloshimushtaim Netivot Chochma. There are the 32 paths of wisdom. So we have another dimension of connection between a higher level and a lower level. You see, we can take these gates. The gates of understanding are a way that the higher level, which is the mind, connects with the lower level, which is the emotion. But now we've got a higher dimension. So these are the 32 paths of wisdom. V'hachiluk shebeinehem, and the difference between these 32 paths of wisdom and the 50 gates of understanding, the difference is shechamishim sharei binah, the 50 gates of understanding, their nature, their purpose, so to speak, is to join the mind with the emotions. But the 32 paths of wisdom, they are seeking to join wisdom and understanding. So we've taken two aspects of the mind among the Sfirot, wisdom and understanding, which are higher than the emotions. And what the 32 paths of wisdom do is join them together, liyot nukuda behechala, that it should be the dot in the palace, literally. Now the dot in the palace, the dot represents the letter Yud, and the palace represents the letter He of the beginning of the divine name, Yud and He. And the Yud represents wisdom, and the He represents understanding. And the dot which enters the letter Yud, which so to speak enters the letter He, is the essence of the idea which comes from wisdom, which really reaches beyond to the infinite beyond, and it's that which impregnates understanding, the letter hey, but it's authentic. And it's there in the letter hey as an authentic connection with the letter yud, and that which transcends the letter yud, which is sometimes described in other texts as the kodsho shel yud, the taret on top of the yud, which reaches upwards into the infinite. Because the mind itself could be a very problematic tool and needs to have its own focus on divine guidance. And so that is described through this image of the dot in the palace, the letter yud, the genuine divine wisdom inside the letter hey of the understanding of the contemplation, which could sometimes lead in a completely inappropriate direction and needs to be reined back. The previous Rebbe, in a fascinating discourse describing this process, speaks about the way that an artist is trying to paint something on a canvas, and he paints and paints and paints, and then he looks at it and he sees it has strayed completely from what he was trying to depict, and he rubs the whole thing out and begins again. And he says that is the process of contemplation in prayer, that the contemplation might have gone off on the wrong track. And the guiding light, so to speak, is the nekudah beheichala, the point, the dot of the yud, because which is there inside the hay of Bina, because it's that dot of the yud which connects back to the infinite divine oneness. The inyan zeh, and this concept, hu al derech ma shenitba le'el, is like was explained above, b'chiluk shebein ratzon elyon. There is the upper will of the divine and the lower will of the divine. Sheratzon ha'tachton, the lower will, or the will of the person, I think, actually. The lower will, hu ratzon shenolad al yedei. That is the will that is brought into being through the person's mind. Beratzona, yeah, it's the person himself or herself, how he or she is relating to God. So we can understand certain things in our mind. Because of that, we get a certain idea. I want to do something. I want to pray with more attention. I want to prepare for Elul and Rosh Hashanah in a good way. So the my mind, the person's mind affects what they want. So it's a will which comes from the mind. But the upper will, that is a kind of will which is higher than intellect. The will of the essence. And that's also the difference. Between the 50 gates of understanding and the 32 paths of wisdom. Because the 50 gates of understanding, they are about drawing the mind into the emotion, as we spoke before. And that is drawing the lower will, which is born through the intellect. Whereas the 32 paths of wisdom, they are drawing down the upper will. That means the will which is higher than intellect. And that is drawn through wisdom. Now, wisdom means now from wisdom, they flow into Bina, into understanding. But it's drawing from beyond wisdom. It's not just the process of wisdom and understanding interacting together through the process of contemplation, giving rise to the emotions below. That's the 50 gates of understanding. This is a higher process in which wisdom, by the fact that it is connected above, flows into Bina, into understanding, and that is a different kind of process. That's what it means. Her husband is known at the gates. So this is another way of interpreting this phrase from the Book of Proverbs, from the Woman of Valor, that this is the drawing of the upper will through the 32 paths of wisdom into the 50 gates of understanding. This has been quite a difficult passage, so I'm stopping sharing if anyone would like to comment or ask questions.
Good evening, Dr.
Hello, Jeffrey. Yes.
The neshama in the body is trying to grasp this. Would a neshama that's been released into the heavenly spheres, would it see something different?
The neshama understands this very well. The mind might be a bit baffled, but the neshama is perfectly okay.
But the soul will.
Yeah, the neshama will eat this for breakfast.
So can you, is it at all possible to grasp
As it said all the way through, you know, from the beginning, there, you know, things that we can grasp, things that we can't grasp. You know, so here it's going into the subtlety of the process, what we can grasp and what we can't. Wow. Yes, Eve, yes.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask if this is something you can initiate and do, or if it's something that has to happen to you. I mean, you can be that vessel that you talked about at the beginning and hope for the best, as opposed to, you know, going out and, you know, in your little raft and sort of collecting it.
Well, I believe that the practice of hisbonenus in prayer, hisbonenut, and as Rabbi Lou was speaking about, he read this, he mentioned this letter from the Rebbe about different approaches to prayer, long, lengthy prayer with deep thought. Where the person can be very much in a very deep inner realm, or a sort of a more abbreviated kind of prayer where there's some level of contemplation and some level of feeling. The Mittler Rebbe, the second Lubavitcher Rebbe, wrote a book called Chuntres HaHitpa'alut, Tract on Ecstasy, where he describes different stages of the way in which the person can be inspired emotionally or cerebrally in prayer. He speaks about five levels where the animal soul is inspired, and then five higher levels where the divine soul is inspired. So one is able to engage in something like this, and there are quite a few books, even in English, that have been written in the last 20 years or so, speaking about praying with that kind of intensity. And there are, of course, Hebrew books, modern Hebrew books, which try to present the earlier teachings of Chabad in a kind of accessible way. This is all available to us to try.
Would you suggest any books?
Well, to be very honest, I think that the second section of Tanya, Shah HaYichud VaEmunah, Gate of Unity and Faith, if one takes the first 6.5 chapters of that, which are telling the sort of the main story, or even the first three chapters. Let's see. You take the first three chapters of Galen, Unity and Faith and use them to think through the ideas which are there, and then let that be the framework of one's prayer or one's contemplation. You might be going for a walk on the hills, but be careful. that's, you know, that I would suggest that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so now we come.
So what you're saying, Rebbe Tally, what you're saying is that you should be really, while you're learning this, you should be holding the hand of a Rebbe. He could lead, or you can get lost.
Well, you know, in a sense, the Rebbe is holding our hand by letting us learn his teaching. You know, he transmitted these teachings, and they were written down, and...
Thank you.
I'm going to miss out a paragraph, which is, you know, like is, let's say, more advanced. But I'm missing it out because it's getting late and we want to get the basic picture. Now we come back to the verse at the beginning of the Sedra. V'zeu shoftim v'shotchim. That's what it means. You should have judges and police. Titen lecha b'chol sharecha. You should put at all your gates. That the service of a person is as is known. Now, this note 17 says, as is known. He gives, I mentioned before, I didn't know where there was the first use of this idea in this kind of ethical way. So there is Sifsei Kohen. He was a rabbi in the 17th century, and he wrote a commentary on the Torah. And in his commentary, we've got this idea. Now, this idea of the guards at the gateways of the person. That the service of a person is that all the gates mean the gates in the body of a person. Like it says in the book of creation, that the body has got seven gates, and they correspond to the seven letters, Bagad Kafra. Now, these seven letters, with the exception of the resh, these are all letters which take a dagesh. There can be bait or vet, like the in the Hebrew grammar. And these are the two eyes, that's two, the two ears, that's four, the two nostrils of the nose, and the mouth. And they are called the gates because through them, a person connects with that which is outside him or her. And it's through this that he receives from the outside, both that he receives from the outside through these gates, and also through these gates he gives to the outside, like we speak, we say something so other people hear. And since these gates could have they could be misused, they could be used in the way of klipot, of impurity and negativity. Therefore, we have to warn a person, do not go astray after your heart and after your eyes. And so that's what it's saying, that you should put judges at the gates, that all these gates in a person, we have to put judges and police. The judges, that means learning the laws of the Torah, and through them we know what is permitted and what is forbidden. And in general, that's the idea of service in such a way of understanding and grasping that with our mind we learn the Torah and we understand certain things are permitted, other things are forbidden, some more strictly. And then we have the police, the shotrim. They are the ones, like the policemen, who like force people to keep whatever the legislators say you have to do. So that is the avodah of Kabbalat Ol, the acceptance of the yoke. Now that's a very important dimension of the individual's personality in relation to the divine and to Judaism, is acceptance of the yoke. As the sages put it, a person should always make his good desire criticize, angry with the bad desire. In other words, we should always be in a sort of a self-critical state, that it's not enough for us to be just understanding. We have to also have the idea of acceptance of the yoke. This is something forbidden, and so I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to think about it. I'm not going to look at it. I'm not going to hear you speak about it, and so on. And these two concepts, the understanding on the one hand, which is the judges, and the acceptance of the yoke, which are the police, they help each other. That means through the acceptance of the yoke, the understanding becomes more complete. And through the understanding, the acceptance of the yoke becomes more inward, as the sages said. And so the sages give a certain metaphor about this. So we're going to miss that out. We're coming to line 17. So when a person has these judges and police at all the seven gates in him or her, and we guard these gates not to use them for negative things, then the negative things are called the gates of death. That's a negative term, but we use it only for holiness. And then they're called Shaarei Tzedek, gates of righteousness. Yes, like the name of the hospital in Israel, Shaarei Tzedek. So then comes the idea that one's husband is known at the gates. The person has the knowledge of God with both ways that were described earlier. That means that the 50 gates of understanding flow into the person, and also the 32 paths of wisdom. And that's the drawing down of the lower will and also the higher will. And as the verse ends off, at the beginning of the Sedra, we didn't manage to get there. Leman tichyeh, so that you should live, v'yarashta et ha'aretz, and you will inherit the land. And the word land, eretz, relates to the word ratzon, which means the lower will and the upper will. And this is a preparation for Rosh Hashanah, because through this service of judges and police that we put at all our gates, and that they judge the people with a judgment of righteousness, through this we go with complete bitochen, with complete trust that God is going to judge us in a good way. So we go with joy to the judgment of Rosh Hashanah, because we know that God will judge his world with righteousness and truth.
Well, Mike,